You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, we have been since 2023 in a much lower return environment than we were in the 2 to 3 crop years leading into that period, particularly the highs that we saw in 2022.
Nick Paulson is an agricultural economist from the University of Illinois.
And so we're dealing with lower returns that are caused by, again, not historically low or, prices that are lower than what we would expect from a long-term average perspective, but lower than where we were at and lower, than where we saw production costs adjust up to, in 2022 and 2023. Those costs have come down a little bit, but they haven't declined as much, as we've seen on the price side.
And when it comes to this ad hoc help, it really comes down to whether or not the nation has the money. House Appropriations Committee advancing the 2027 Ag FDA funding bill last week, moving another major spending measure forward while adjusting support across USDA agencies. Now, the bill cleared committee with bipartisan support now heads toward possible House floor consideration. The measure provides $22.5 billion for USDA. That's $675 million less than the enacted level from last year. Funding for APHIS holding steady, $1.158 billion. AMS reduced by $6.8 million to $201 million. Farm Service Agency funded at $1.1 billion, down $19 million, and NRCS had $800 million, down $50. U.S. soybean crush increased in March as processors turned more beans into crude and refined oil. USDA said soybean crush, 227 million bushels, up from 214 in February, and 207 million a year earlier. Now, it did push oil production higher. Crude soybean oil output, 2.64 billion pounds in March, up 6% from February, 7% more than 1 year ago. Canola processing also strengthened. Canola crush at 225,000 tons in March, above both February and 1 year earlier. Monthly report points to stronger oilseed processing in soybeans and canola, while animal fat output remained weaker. And new county level maps from the University of Illinois show Farm Bill Title I payments reached most of rural America from 2014 through 2023, largest totals concentrated in a relatively small number of counties. Updated Policy Design Lab found 97% of counties received some payments, yet only 24 topped $100 million, while 197 counties exceeded $50 million. But the bottom line is expenses aren't coming down.
You know, the concern right now, particularly since the Iran conflict began at the end of February, there's probably even less optimism than we would have had 2 months ago about, you know, further downward adjustments in those costs. In fact, all expectations would be for continued increases, some impact on the 26 crop year, but then bigger potential impacts as we look ahead to 2027.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Over the past couple of weeks, the inversion of the Joy Select spread has been a frequent topic in agriculture media.
Don Close is a senior animal protein analyst with Terrain.
The concern is that when the spread is inverted, it means consumer interest in the lower quality product is greater than for the high quality product. In other words, consumers are trading down. However, I argue that in the current market environment, the spread is meaningless measurement. In previous years, an inverted spread mattered, but the grading percentages then was about 60% choice or better and about 40% select, and the majority of retail grocery chains carried select product. There were also no branded beef programs, and the percentages of carcasses grading prime ranged from 2 to 4%. Now, retail stores predominantly carry choice and better product. It is also common for the percentage of prime carcasses to be 10 to 15% and for there to be more prime than selects in the marketplace. Why the sudden escalation in demand for select product? The main reason is that the supply of select product has contracted, which can make it appear that there is an increase in demand. The supply went from 50% of graded beef carcasses in the 1990s and early 2000s to about 10% currently. As with any commodity product, as supply contracts, the price is going to increase. Then there is the fact that we're working with the smallest domestic cattle supply in 70 years. Even with the escalation in lean beef trimmings because of imports, the U.S. supply of lean beef for making ground beef blends is exceptionally tight. Processors are searching for any source of lean beef to increase supplies of lean grinding materials. There is also demand for select products and institutional use, primarily hospitals. Select products are also still used in many prepared frozen foods. Is this going to be a long-term scenario? I certainly don't think so. Is the inversion of the spread going to disrupt the current market? Again, I don't think that's the case. When the day comes that grain prices escalate and the cost of gain exceeds the value of gain, the market may have to take another look. In that case, the economics would discourage cattle feeders from fattening cattle as much, leading to more select beef, a lower select price, and a higher choice price. Currently, with cost of gain running around $1 a pound, and the value of gain approaching $2.50, the inversion of the spread will not be a market disrupting factor anytime soon. A better measurement would be a choice branded beef cutout or a choice prime spread. The last time USDA beef grading matrix was updated or changed was in 1997. At that time, there were no branded beef products. In my opinion, the grading matrix needs to be updated to incorporate all beef in the upper one-third of choice and better. Consumers have proven their demand for ultra-high-quality beef. First, when certified Angus beef products were introduced in grocery stores, and again, when grocery stores started carrying prime products during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now protein diets have become the craze. The American consumer is not going to go back to eating a largely select product.
Can this market continue at this pace? Dr. Glenn Tonzer, K-State Livestock Economist.
The headcount supply side remains, you know, supportive of being high levels. Nothing has changed there. The consumer demand part has held up better than most of us would have expected. But hence was my comment about like the broader marketplace, right? Even outside of cattle for a moment, is pull up the S&P 500 and, you know, those kinds of things and other commodities. Many of them have been on a pretty positive run the last 4 or 6 weeks. So it feels like there's some extra strength that can't go on forever is what I'm kind of teeing up there. That's not saying I'm expecting a crash. Please don't overreact to that. But some pausing on these gains would probably be my best guess.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
The effects and the impact of climate change are real.
Interesting exchange between Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro and the administrator of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, in an appropriation subcommittee hearing.
You probably did see the report on Antarctica and the glaciers and melting and all this. It was an extraordinary documentary over this past weekend. This is an administration that is hell-bent, in my view, on ignoring science. Just 2 weeks ago, you reportedly attended a climate deniers conference. And in your remarks, you said, quote, "For those who wanted to criticize my appearance here before this group, it really shows the desperation of just how many walls have collapsed of this last line of defense," end quote. In Connecticut, we have seen increasing heat waves, extreme precipitation, devastating floods, impacting everything, farming, school closures, damaging homes and businesses. Climate change is harming our health and our environment, but is also harming Americans financially. This administration, however, is running the playbook on making the problem worse, focusing on policies that are handouts to the fossil fuel companies, like reversing the 2009 greenhouse gas endangerment finding, rolling back fuel emission standards for motor vehicles, and reducing methane leak monitoring requirements. The budget proposal reads like a climate change deniers manifesto. When climate change is flooding our streets, poisoning our air, driving up health care and disaster costs, how can the EPA justify abandoning that duty to protect Americans to appease polluters under the false flag of economic growth?
Following the law, Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, where does it say anything about fighting global climate change? Loper Bright, Supreme Court case. You familiar with it?
No, I maybe others are. I'm not, but let me ask.
But that's really important. As a member of Congress, Loper Bright says that we as an agency don't have the authority to get creative. If Section 202 of the Clean Air Act.
No, but you don't have, excuse me, you do not have the right to say climate change does not exist, that it's a hoax, and that's where this administration is coming from.
I understand you're upset that you don't know what Loper Bright is. Do you know what the major policies doctrine is?
I'm upset because.
You know what the major policies doctrine is?
You know what, let me just.
You're a member of Congress. You should know.
Well, you have moved from someone who defended the environment to all of a sudden
being very defensive about not knowing the two biggest landmark Supreme Court cases of the last year with regards to your question.
You are very defensive about changing your policy and your positions with regard to the environment.
Okay.
Now, you just tell
me. You want
me
to tell you what the two biggest Supreme Court cases are of the last few years?
This is what I want you
to
tell me.
Michigan versus EPA.
Whoa.
West Virginia versus EPA.
You know, you're here because you need money from us. So halt for the second. And wait for the questions and answer the questions.
Well, I answered your question.
No, you didn't.
And you didn't like my answer because you don't know what Loper Bright is, because you don't know what the major policies doctrine is.
Chairman,
because you're asking me
questions.
You're asking me about Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, and you don't read it. You don't know what it says.
Listen, and what you want to do is to deny –
I actually read the law. I do my homework.
Really?
You're just somebody who likes to have the microphone on. You know what I have to do? I read the law.
No,
I read
Chairman,
the Supreme Court cases.
I don't have to listen to this, and I would say
no,
this.
No, what you should do for your constituents is actually read statute.
This budget is at real risk.
Read your Supreme Court.
This is the Appropriations Committee.
Oh, you're here. You care
and
about science? Now you're threatening to defund it?
Oh, my God. No, you don't fund
because
science.
Because you don't know what Loper Bright is. Because
deniers.
You don't know what the major policies
you
doctrine
are
is. Your message
deniers.
To our folks at the EPA is that you want to defund us.
I don't have to listen to this BS.
The BS. You think I made up these cases?
Yeah, I think you have made up a whole
I made up Loper Bright. I made up West Virginia versus EPA. I made up Michigan versus EPA.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
In the last few years in particular, 24 and 25, our income really has been provided through some additional ad hoc federal support.
University of Illinois ag economist Nick Paulson.
We still do have a very strong safety net provided by the ARC and PLC programs and the commodity title and then our excellent crop insurance program. But I think we've seen, again, in this specific price cost squeeze, even those programs do leave some gaps, and those ad hoc payments have, again, in the short term, helped to fill those gaps, but also likely slowed some of the cost adjustments that we'd like to see longer term.
So how long can this continue?
You know, the big question on everyone's mind is, you know, how much can we, or how much longer can we continue to count on that, you know, that level and extent of support to top up some of those losses? And, you know, if that's the case, what does that do to, again, some of the changes that need to be made longer term to get back to more of a market-based profitability situation? So, again, 2025 returns were an improvement relative to 23 and 24. That's very much a silver lining way to look at it, I suppose. You know, that is not to say that 25 was a better year for everybody. There were instances, particularly in Southern Illinois, where, you know, there were farms that dealt with much poorer yields. And so, you know, those averages, obviously, as Brad said, there's farms that are both below and above those averages. And so not every farm necessarily stabilized or slightly strengthened their position, which is what those averages suggest. You know, as Gary pointed out, there is the potential here for even another round being talked about of payments that could be still associated with the 2025 crop that could maybe still show up this year. You know, recent announcements about the SDRP top up, which actually is associated with 23 and 24 crop losses, but payments showing up this year. But then even discussions about, you know, another bridge like wave of payments to maybe address some of the fuel and fertilizer challenges that have been introduced here in the last 8 weeks. I think for 2026, we're still looking at, you know, weaker returns. I think some of the higher corn and soybean prices we've seen in the last few months or since the start of the year are going to be offset by some higher costs that will even impact our 2026 numbers. In the absence of any additional ad hoc payment program, I think we'd be looking at 26 returns being even weaker than what we saw in 2025. That could change. And then looking ahead to 2027, I think that's the bigger concern now, particularly as we think about what some of these energy and fertilizer price increases could do as a result of what's going on in the Middle East and how that might impact our 2027 planning and budgeting. You know, looking ahead, I think, you know, we will be expecting higher fuel and fertilizer prices. At this point, it looks like particularly for that 2026 pricing window, we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. But higher fuel and fertilizer prices probably impacting the 27 crop more than this year. And I think the worry here is the longer that this goes on, some of the more general inflation impacts and higher energy prices translating into further pressures on some of the other costs outside of just the fertilizer and diesel fuel line items that we have in our budgets.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This past week was, I would call it steady.
Dr. Glenn Tonser, Kansas State livestock economist on Cash Trade.
AMS called the fed cattle market at 256 through Friday. That's the five market average price. And then they were a little bit more bullish and up in their comments around feeder cattle. So the Kansas feeder cattle quotes by AMS, different locations throughout the week, were $5 and sometimes even $20 per hundredweight higher than the week before. Two lots I wrote it down, you know, one lower weight lot, 542 pounds, came in at 518, and then a larger lot, 168 head, weighing 658, came at 459. Both of those would be up at, you know, at least $10 from the week before. It's nice to see some positive support in the cash market. The equity markets have had an incredible run the last 4 or 6 weeks, and quite honestly, it's a little bit amazing to watch some of the recovery given we still have quite a bit of macroeconomic and political uncertainty that hasn't really gone away, but yet the commodity equity markets have been on a bit of a run, positive run.
That's the cash trade. What about demand?
These protein values. So it's a list of 12 things, and it's a forced rank. So you can't tell me all 12 are mission critical to you. And we regularly find taste and freshness lead the decision. They are most frequently the top decision factor for folks. And then price and safety often come in third and fourth. There was a time when safety outpaced price. About halfway through this MDM project 3 years ago or so, price replaced safety. So price has grown in importance, you know, as this project has went on. But conversely, things like environmental impact, origin traceability, animal welfare, use of hormones and antibiotics, they are the top factors for less than 20% of the public. All that really means is there's more people to put them in the bottom four bucket than there is people to put in the top four, is how you interpret that. Taste is the key determinant factor. And to your point, Shelby, I've been saying that for 6 years. That's not a new statement, but just because something isn't new doesn't mean it isn't useful for us to remember it. And I think it's critical to the beef demand success story we've witnessed the last few years. Here's where my, you know, perpetual Glenn's have broken the record player stuck on stuck and Glenn's concerned about macroeconomics. That's still the case. And that's where this is coming from. So in April, in the MDM, 17% told us their finances are better than April of 2025. Contrast that with a full 38%. So over a third say they're worse and a little less than half say they're the same. The part that's most relevant for the meat industry is how does that correspond with prior day inclusion of meat in your diet? And then this food channel thing, spending money at home versus away from home on food. And let's just talk beef specifically for a moment. If you tell me your finances are better than a year ago, which again is about 17% of the public, you consumed a little less than one meal, specifically 0.86 meals. Yesterday it included beef. Conversely, if you tell me, no, my finances are worse, which is over the third of the country, it's more like 0.6. My reminder here is we're a country of over 300 million people. So these small differentials times a big number, it adds up. And what I just gave you for beef is not unique to beef. So we have a chart and you and I are both looking at now while we're talking is, you know, has pork, chicken, fish, seafood on it. And that comment about you're more likely to consume those products yesterday if your finances have improved holds across them all. It's actually strongest differential for fish and seafood, but beef, pork, and chicken, that's definitely the case. And that's why we track it in the meat demand monitor because it's very important. The follow-up would be, all right, what market channel are we seeing these differentials show up in? And it's primarily, if your finances are getting worse, you go to restaurants and spend money at restaurants less. So that's, you'll also find that in the April base MDM report. This is why I continue to be a intentionally broken record tracking this. I've been pleasantly surprised at the aggregate macroeconomic situation. You know, I made the comment earlier about the equity market strength and several commodities are up strongly the last 6 weeks and so forth, sort of despite what I just gave you on the household finance pessimism, but we need to continue monitoring it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Department of Commerce continues to work around the clock to implement President Trump's America First trade policy.
Testifying before a House subcommittee on appropriations, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
Under Section 232, the Commerce Department is taking action on steel, aluminum, copper, pharmaceuticals, autos, semiconductors, and investigating other sectors to protect, reshore, and revive manufacturing. These actions have led to multi-billion dollar commitments to reshore steel and aluminum manufacturing and restore American excellence in critical industries. In the first year of his second term, President Trump has dramatically reduced the trade deficit, lowering imports and increasing exports. Exports went to $3.4 trillion, which is a 6% increase from 2024. And in 2025, the trade deficit was the lowest we've seen in 16 years. I'm proud of the role I played in negotiating our most important trade agreement, including the largest deal ever done, which was our trade deal and investment deal with the European Union. BIS is working hand in hand with the Department of Health and Human Services. We've arranged historic agreements to lower drug prices for American consumers, negotiating most favored nation deals, and ensuring Americans pay the lowest prices for innovative medicines. As a result of these deals, additionally, we have secured over $400 billion in commitments to reshore pharmaceuticals and manufacturing in America, those key pharmaceuticals. The budget includes a $215 million increase to BIS above the 2026 enacted level, which supports the hiring of hundreds of new special agent law enforcement officials to address the theft of American technological leadership by bad actors. These officers are critical to protecting and defending America's innovation. In ITA, we are driving record foreign direct investment, cracking down on harmful foreign trade practices, and supporting our 1.3 million American jobs with export and investment deals. In 2025, ITA helped Boeing, Wabtec, and other major American companies secure a record $244 billion in contracts with foreign public buyers. This exceeds the $17 billion that the Biden administration did in its first year. The budget includes a $10 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for trade enforcement in ITA and $100 million for the United States Investment Accelerator. The budget slashes unnecessary wasteful spending at NIST and other groups and eliminates the manufacturing extension partnership, which I'm sure we will talk about. At the USPTO, we are rapidly modernizing and leveraging technology to cut classification prep dramatically. We want to get rid of the massive backlog that we had and do a much better job. And finally, we have launched a new era of modernization of NOAA, where we're in the process of transferring the agency's IT system from a decades-old hardwired technology to the modern distributed cloud. This update will improve our forecasting capabilities, transform the way our forecasters do their jobs, and will make Americans safer. The budget also includes a $135 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for NOAA shipbuilding and our improvement of unmanned systems programs. For far too long, our nation was mired in status quo, leaving American consumers and producers alike with unfair, poorly implemented trade deals, outsourced jobs, and paltry investments that failed to meet our country's potential. President Trump is committed to ushering in a golden age of domestic commerce and bringing jobs back to the United States, and that's exactly what he's done in his first 15 months of this administration. I look forward to working with you as the department continues to spur economic growth and secure unprecedented prosperity for the American people.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.